Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustments to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. Welcome to Part Sinner, Part Saint with Afasiana and Babbler. And we are part of Late Night Poets, which is a group on the website allpoetry.com. You don't have to be a part of the group to participate in the show, but it's more fun if you are. We will be posting the links to the poems in the chat so you can follow along with us. Babbler. Hello.
Hello. How you doing?
Oh, all right. It's been kind of a crazy time with fire. It seems to be my ongoing theme of the summer. But I'm not evacuated currently, so that's nice. It's been a living out of a suitcase situation.
Fun. Fun.
Mm-hmm.
Not really, but...
Life, you pretend you're on vacation.
I've had an extremely hectic week, so yeah, went camping and had some kind of allergic reaction to something, and my feet swole up real huge. Like, I had no ankles, I just had dents. And I've been on lots of medication for that, and then I came back to work, FDA audit. And then I had a bunch of pathogen holds on stuff because we had material arrive that had failing test results. So I've been in contact with the FDA again. And, I mean, nothing that would put anybody at risk. It's incoming stuff, but, like, just one thing after another. And then I had a test dryer blow up on me today, so I left work at 9 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
After getting to work
tough
at 7
week.
O'clock. And it's been a bad week. It's just been a bad week. And then it's never mind, like, the mental health dive I've been going on. So, you know, I've been pretty open about the fact that, you know, I have bipolar, so my mood very normal moments, of course, but I'd been manic for some time and trying to kind of like ride that high for as long as you can, even though, you know, it's going to fall, which can be tricky, you know. And then the allergic reaction kind of kicked me down the road, so it's been a rough week on top of a rough week, so, you know.
Not good. I'm glad that you're still here with us and pushing through. And I really like that you channeled all of that into your contest. Can you explain it for us?
Yeah. So I was thinking about what I wanted to do this contest about. And it was kind of a struggle for me just because a lot of my depressive states, you know, involve things like problems with executive function and problems with decision-making and procrastination, like getting things done. And so I can either post something extremely last minute and just, like, not talk about the elephant in the room, or I can just talk about what's going on, you know, and kind of share and discuss what's happening and invite people to kind of share their poetic expressions of the downsides of things that they deal with. So the theme that I picked for the contest was broken or blank, because those are two words that I use a lot when I'm feeling the way that I'm feeling now, because it's not like I'm sitting around being sad all the time. I just feel very empty, and it's a strange sensation. So I thought, you know, maybe there's other people out there who would relate to that, who want to write or have written something on that theme. I also included 4 quotes in the contest as well, just because sometimes people operate better using a quote to go off of. So I picked 4 quotes that I felt represented kind of what I was talking about well. So I can go ahead and read those. So the first quote I picked was by Nikita Gill, and it's, "You are damaged and broken and unhinged, but so are shooting stars and comets." And the second one was, "I wanted to write down exactly what I felt, but somehow the paper stayed empty, and I could not have described it any better." And that one just had initials WTM. And then, "Today my forest is dark. The trees are sad and all the butterflies have broken wings." So that was a quote by Rain Cooper. And then the 4th and last quote was, "Sometimes I get so sad that I completely shut down. I stare blankly at the wall and it doesn't matter what you say to me because at that moment I don't exist." And that one was an anonymously posted quote. So, you know, knowing a little bit that this is probably going to delve into, you know, the darker sides of emotion, but I think it's important to go there at times. So that's kind of the theme of the night.
Well, I really appreciated how you opened up about yourself in the contest, and I think that encourages people and makes them feel comfortable to open up in their poetry as well. I have brought someone on with us. I'm actually not sure who it is. Caller, who do we have with us? Hello?
It helps if you say
Merry, Merry, Merry Friday.
Hello, Laurent.
Hello.
How are you? Hey, babbler.
Surviving.
How we doing, guys? How we doing?
We are hanging in there. It's been a challenge lately, but we're here and we're gonna enjoy some great poetry.
That's right. We won't even think about all the ash you have to tread through.
I spent 4 hours this evening squeegeeing up garbanzo. Wonderful.
Yeah. Let me know what your car's finish looks like in a few weeks.
So Laurent actually wrote for one of my contests because, you know, I in a bit of a panic because we were a little bit late this week. I made a whole bunch of contests because that's just what I do. So some of it's going to get carried over to next week. But let's do callers first, and then we will get into Babbler's contest. So your poem is up if you can get us started, Laurent.
All righty. Let me get back to the room. I had wandered away. Good Lord. Okay. I did base this on the contest Grieve Pieces of Yourself. And I think I took a little bit of all the prompts. All right. This is called I Grieve for Us. I grieve for the death of blessings, stigmata on my soul that bleed in secret, a wealth of painful punctures, blessings of birth, marriage, and growth, of reaching for lightning rods and cresting their tops, banner in hand. I grieve for fallen comrades in and out of uniform, all stripes, all colors, all friends, leaving so few able to draw breath. Friends who helped me measure the years with laughter and sorrow, mingled as required, recipes for life. I grieve for truth and idealism, now mocked and ridiculed by small minds who fly flags of fear and racism, posturing conundrums bleached white as bone, old hatreds driven deep by neurons that spark across gaps. I grieve for the children, their bloated bellies smooth with famine, their eyes crusted by the lords of lies who feast in willful disregard. For the billions in the face of impending diaspora, driven by famine and flame, by lack of water, by too much water. In the face of all this, I grieve for us. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. I really enjoyed this. You know, it might be a kind of interesting thing to kind of pick out or point out in this, but I think what I really enjoyed most about this piece is the use of the word us. You know, it's the inclusion of yourself in the group. You know, there's so many ways to exclude people, you know, you, them, they, you know, the words that designate otherness that could have so easily infiltrated this piece, but didn't, you know, and I guess I really appreciate it because it's not like I feel bad for you, it's that I feel bad for us, as in the inclusion of yourself and part of a group, I feel makes the like emotionality of this piece stronger. There's a lot of beautiful phrasing in here and wording, you know, about just the grieving for the state of the world and a lot of the things that are happening, and a lot of the things that are witnessed. So, I think it's all beautifully done, but I do think my favorite piece of this poetry is the use of the word us. So, excellent, right? What did you
think
of Louisiana? welcome.
I really loved the stanza, posturing conundrums, bleached white as bone, old hatreds driven deep by neurons that spark across gaps. I thought that that was just so beautifully written. And I like that you grieve truth and idealism and the recognition that there are small minds who are flying the flags of fear and racism. I think that that was a really strong point. And you talk about all different kinds of aspects of the world that you're grieving, for those children, for your old friends, for everyone, and the mix of the laughter and sorrow as a recipe for life was really nice too. I like that you pointed out it could be lack of water, it could be too much water, and it's like that with so many things. It's like you have too much or not enough, and either way, it's disaster. This is really powerful piece. It's eloquently worded. Thank you so much for it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, great comment, Afisi, on it. Yeah, I agree. There's just so many excellent lines in here about just the goings on of the world. And the draw of attention to like excess and not enough being equal problems. Great observation. Pam, did you get a chance to hear the piece? If you're here.
I did, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, I really like how you take this through a lifetime of grief in its various forms. So sometimes grief is for ourselves and the sadness we feel at a loss. And sometimes our grief is for other people, for friends and family that we know have lost something or someone they care about. I particularly like, I grieve for fallen comrades in and out of uniform, all stripes, all colors, all friends. You know, there's that sense of connection between people who serve and fight together. I grieve for the children, their bloated bellies smooth with famine, their eyes crusted. And what I particularly like about that is the fact that you don't limit the grief to, you know, your intermediate family and friends. The grief is a grief for a sadness, a crying, for the whole world that is being, for children that you have never actually maybe physically met, but you know that they're out there and they're dying and something needs should be done. I think it's a powerful right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
I agreed, Pam. I do think, yeah, like I said, it's just very inclusionary. And, yeah, the closeness and the distance, that's a great thing to point out. Where are we off to next, Afisiana?
I was thinking you could read the one by Scraps and Scribbles.
Sure. Let me get there. This is A Little Lost by Scraps and Scribbles. So space is drinking all the warmth away. Soon stars will lend their ardor to the frost, that bruise of dusk replacing orange day. And I confess, I feel a little lost. Oh, heart of mine, your broken compass turns. There is no north, but only chaos rolling. And something like the sun inside you burns. As something stalled, you prayed would start unfolding. I live beneath the shadow of the dove, cannot be cleansed and drink the water, too. There is no path that leads away from love. The world's a sphere. It comes back into view. I look ahead, and there is yesterday. And then behind, the same thing dies away. End poem. I enjoyed this piece. I think it's a sonnet. I didn't count the lines as I was reading, but it felt like a sonnet. There's both a sadness to this piece, like a melancholy kind of feeling, and yet there's also this reflectiveness that I can really relate to. You know, when you experience these kind of cyclical emotions, there's a part of you that's rational that says, yes, I know it's going to end. I know it's temporary. This is a cycle. But there's still this other part that's just kind of floundering. You know, how do I get through today? And, you know, when, how long, when's it going to end? And that's kind of what it makes me feel. And I like it. And I think the title works super well with that as a concept because it's a little lost. You know, the general direction is there and the knowledge is there, but there's still this, like, overwhelming sense of, like, bewilderment and, like, frustration. Some of the descriptions in here I thought were really beautiful. You know, that bruise of dusk replacing orange day. It's just a beautiful imagery. Like, I picture almost like a tangerine, you know, when a tangerine starts to, when it gets bruised or when it starts to rot and how it turns to, like, that brown kind of color on the orange. I just thought that was gorgeous imagery there. I also really liked cannot be cleansed and drink the water too, because you just picture, like, you know, you can't drink your bath water. I mean, you can, but that's not not ideal. You know, there's some, like, it almost brings a taste as a sense into this piece, which I thought was really well done. And then the closing couplet, I look ahead and there is yesterday, and then behind the same thing dies away. You know, just goes back to the cyclical nature of things. You know, like, you've been through this before and you'll be through this again, and, you know, it just goes round and round. So I thought this was a really beautiful piece, and I think it really conveys the emotion of feeling a little lost. And yet not entirely lost very well. So I thought this was an excellent write. What did you think of it, Pam?
I really liked this. Well, first of all, I have to say, Babbler, I think this is a wonderful idea for a contest, and I have a feeling we're in for a lot of just excellent and emotive writes tonight. So I think giving people the opportunity to put up poetry about their brokenness. It's just a beautiful idea. This is a wonderfully written sonnet. A lot of great use of imagery. I like the bruises of dust. Bruise of dust replacing orange day. I also like how you mentioned the broken compass and that there is no north but only chaos going and something like the sun inside you burns. That whole idea of knowing you're feeling emotions that are overwhelming you, but not knowing what to do with it. And one more line that I found particularly intriguing is, I live beneath the shadow of the dove. And I found that, you know, because it's interesting, because the dove oftentimes represents, you know, peace and hope. But to live beneath the shadow of the dove, it's almost, there's adds a certain darkness to it, but yet at the same time you can't help but think that maybe there's within that chaos of emotion, there's kind of that sense of a peace that can be found. It's excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I also really liked that line about living in the shadow of the dove. You know, just, yeah, the kind of no, awareness is peace, if not necessarily like emotional feeling. I agree. I really liked that line. Laurent, would you like to share your thoughts?
This is such a tight, well-written little piece, or sonnet, as Pam said. Those first two lines, so space is drinking all the warmth away. Soon stars will lend their ardor to the frost. What a clever way of referring to the distance between the sun and earth, growing, bringing us autumn. And we all know how stars twinkle on cold, frosty nights. It's a beautiful compliment to the coming season of winter. I thought the phrasing on that bruise of dusk replacing Orange Day was masterful, as well as the broken compass of the heart, which has lost its true north, and that will leave you feeling lost. And then that feeling that there's more inside of you that needs to come out, that could succeed possibly, but it is stalled, and even though you prayed that it would start, it says unfolding, it would begin to bear fruit, you would move on to something better perhaps. I love the line, cannot be cleansed and drink the water too. I think it says you have to be pure or you can be a consumer of sorts. You can't be both at the same time. You know, if you step in the water, you can't claim it's dry. And then, of course, the universal constant of love. There's no path that leads away from love. The world's a sphere. It comes back into view. That's a wonderful image. There is a line in the song Time by Pink Floyd that talks about the world, the sun setting and then coming up behind you again. This is a little reminiscent of that. I look ahead, and there is yesterday, and then behind, the same thing dies away. There's such a sameness to your life right now that yesterday is going to be just like the next day. Just a beautifully, beautifully written piece.
I like that notion. I almost picture like a wandering eyeball or something, as weird as that sounds, with that line, you know, about love coming back into view. Like if you could like pinpoint love as a place on a globe and then, you know, you're always heading towards it. Anyway, just some of the imagery I got. What did you think of Faziana?
I really enjoyed it. I liked the compass part. There is no north, but only chaos rolling, and you know that feeling of not knowing what to do or where to go, because it's just like everything feels so out of control. The Orange Day part kind of freaked me out because part of the weird thing with the fires in my area last Sunday and Monday,
mm-hmm.
all day it was bright orange, the whole sky. So it was weird. It was like sunset, but all day and really, really bright, like crazy orange. So it was like the apocalypse sky. So as soon as I heard Orange Day, I'm like, the sky is back. anyway, that's just my own craziness. I loved the ending. I look ahead and there's yesterday, and then behind, the same thing dies away. That just feels so profound. I mean, you all made wonderful comments, so it's hard for me to add anything to that, but wonderful poem.
Indeed. Yeah, I think it was just a very well done sonnet. Where are we going to now?
Pam, would you read the one by Diana Thorson?
I would be happy to. All right. Looks like you have it posted already, so I need to refresh my screen.
I think I need to refresh because I did it, but it doesn't look like it actually went through. Sorry, just one second.
Okay.
Yes, my connection has been spotty. We've lost a few power lines. Here we go.
Oh, I understand that.
Okay, it should be up now.
All right, this is Christmas Trees at Smithfield Center Doctors by Diana Thorson, and it goes like this. Paraboloid totems of evergreen hope, upside down, sparkling white trinkets, sparkling white deers. What do we need to do now, you ask? I got my husband's winged blue stone gift around my neck, a dragonfly. Isn't my green dress an evergreen kingly shroud? Well, stormy and luminous, the cuts on my arm are still caked in dried blood. You're sad, your heart bleeds into mine, with a bit of emerald dust and ruby red sunrises. The doctor is the rose. I am the flame. You are all marble, Play-Doh, self-contained. I am grotesque, decaying, will it born. My scars are trim poodles, with slightly wolfish eyes. Just for you, it bleeds, a blazing cornucopia of yellow wattle springs. Doctor, your heart is a gold mine, and joyous is spring. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. I found this piece very interesting. The comparison of, you know, a self-harm, you know, I took this as being about self-harm, to almost kind of flowers and blending it with what feels like the joy of Christmas in some ways. Like, just such a hodgepodge of feeling, you know. You know, these beautiful descriptions of evergreen hope and sparkling white trinkets and sparkling white deers and all these wonderful colors and gifts and, you know, all of that. And then in the midst of it, there's this injury, you know, there's this hurting yourself and by proxy hurting the person that you care about. You know, you are sad. Your heart bleeds into mine with a bit of emerald dust and ruby red sunrises. You know, just the way that it can affect others and just the acknowledgement of that in this piece I found interesting. And then that ending, you know, whose slightly wolfish eyes, just for you, will bleed a blazing cornucopia of yellow wattle sprigs. Doctor, your heart is a gold mine and joyous as spring. You know, still able to look at another person and feel the joy and yet the delicacy of it, you know, the fragility of happiness, I think is really well done here by comparing it to, you know, a bright yet temporary flower. That's how I took it, you know, the temporariness of spring. So I just really enjoyed all the colors and imagery in here. I thought it was a really gorgeous piece. What did you think, Laurent?
I put a note in the room. I have to pass on this one.
Oh, okay, sorry. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is, it's intriguing when somebody writes about such a dark subject, but in such a beautiful way. You know, the use of imagery, you know, I find that it seems as if this person who is unfortunately, you know, hurting themselves and cutting themselves has found someone that is almost like a rock for them to lean on. You know, I just, it's sad because of the fact that you feel like there's this inner struggle within the person that, you know, they realize how much they're hurting themselves, not just physically but emotionally, and how much they're hurting the people they love, and yet they cannot stop. I thought it was really creative to describe her scars. My scars are trim poodles with slightly wolfish eyes. Just for you will be a blazing cornucopia. I feel like with that, there's the whole idea of, you know, trying to keep everything in control, and yet the emotion, the sadness, the anger just comes flaring out every once in a while. I think it's an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, the idea of the emotion flaring out. Yeah, I think that's a great observation. Wonderfully described. What did you think, Faithiana?
I thought this was very well done and powerful in its topic and delicate in the way that it's described. You know, self-harm can be a difficult thing to talk about, and usually it's quite gritty when we do, but it's almost beautiful here in the use of the colors and the description, like not the actual self-harm itself, but the poem has a beauty to it that I wouldn't expect necessarily with this topic. And the scars as trim poodles I found very interesting. But my favorite part, both of you pointed out, the one with whose slightly wolfish eyes, just for you, will bleed a blazing cornucopia of yellow wattle sprigs. To bleed the yellow flowers that are beautiful, but the temporary, like you pointed out, Babbler, it's quite striking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the floral imagery as a parallel to self-harm. I found very interesting. I also found it very fascinating that it's not, you know, it's not a red flower. It's not a direct comparison to blood in the way you would expect it to be, but it's almost more of a goldenrod description. I thought that made it a very interesting choice. Where are we going now?
I'm going to read one by Allison Hodges. Fragile moment. Time cracked, sending seconds sailing through the sky. The fragile road that led my mind from string to string of all the phases, past, present, and future warbling, as the crack in time reverberated through my life. Living life, not in reverse or forward, but side to side, from one brilliant moment to another. I saw my future fizzle into eternity, and my past shattered to bits and pieces, no longer coherent, losing their place and hold on me. I felt fear in my stomach as everything I knew shifted and changed in a continuous kaleidoscope of all the me's that ever were, ripped and reborn. A mess of contrary views, a whirlwind of thoughts, true or not, a ride the universe on a wave of mixed up memories, colliding with what I thought was the constancy of today. My mind broke open under the weight of all the years in a single second, scattered beliefs surrounding the sun, clamoring to be heard above the din of infinity. End poem.
Wonderful read, Faziana. I really enjoyed the imagery that my mind kind of came up with while reading this. I picture, you know, almost that with that very opening line, time cracked. I almost pictured an egg, you know, like breaking open an egg, which I thought was a really interesting way to start. And then I pictured almost like this shattering kind of glitter, almost in a way of looking at all of the different moments of a lifetime, like simultaneously and not in chronological order. I know my mind went to some really kind of interesting and wonderful places with this. I'm a very visual thinker. When I hear things, I tend to process them into images in my mind. So I thought this was really interesting, and yet I can really relate to it too. You know, there's definitely been those introspective moments of my life where I've compared like all the different ideologies that I've had throughout my life and how I've changed and grown and developed as a person. And yet, you know, still those inner children and inner ways of thinking, they still kind of coexist within myself. So it's really interesting. So I really like this, you know. My mind broke open under the weight of all the years in a single second. Scattered beliefs surrounded the sun, clamoring to be heard above the din of infinity. You know, just wanting to be heard, just wanting to be recognized, and just there's cohesion almost in the lack of cohesion. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a rather visually stunning piece for me. So an excellent write from Allison. Faziana, what did you think?
I was also drawn to that kaleidoscope of all the me's that ever were. And it makes me think about, okay, now this is a kind of a silly reference, but I mean it in a serious way, that in the Marvel Universe, there's like a whole bunch of different overlapping timelines. And so there's this one Spider-Man thing where he meets all, like that you meet all the different kinds of Spider-Man. And I feel like that actually maybe more metaphorical than I ever gave it credit for, where it's like there are so many different versions of ourselves. It would, like, for all of them to meet, for you to be able to see the different ways that things could have been and to think about the different ways that you have been over time, and have all of them ripped apart and be reborn. It's just, I don't know, that it's an interesting concept. But my favorite part in this poem was, I saw my future fizzle into eternity and my past shattered to bits and pieces. There's something about losing both your future and your past and not feeling, like, coherent, as it says, and not feeling like you have a place in time anymore. There's this kind of spiral out of control when you feel like you don't have a grip on any time that I can relate to. I thought this was very nicely done.
I like that observation. You know, so interesting to compare, you know, other people's interpretations to my interpretations. I almost viewed it as grounding in a way to not be concerned about past or present. I mean, past or future, and just living in a moment is almost a grounding rather than a loss of place. But, you know, it is followed by, I felt fear in my stomach. So, you know, that may be closer to the intention. But, yeah, excellent observation. And what did you think, Laurent? Nope.
Meat monster?
Well, yeah, and it took a big bite out of my butt, too. Wow, that stings. Okay. We all come face-to-face with moments, seminal moments, where everything changes in our life immediately. And the author tells us that this represents a period of time where when she was on a ventilator and doesn't remember any of it because, obviously, I think you're unconscious. They put you in kind of a coma, I guess. I'm not exactly sure. But she takes that moment. And it's not a long moment. Perhaps it's that moment when you're being wheeled on a gurney into the operating room or into the room where they have the ventilator. And you're not put to sleep quite yet. But you're about to go under. And I think that's something that we can all relate to, that moment when they're about to operate on us, and we're going to lose consciousness. And then I can see where everything in this poem can come flooding into your head. All the things that you never planned for are on hold. You're not living life in reverse or forward, but it's static, side to side. You know, and you see your future fizzle into eternity. You feel the fear as everything that you knew shifted and changed because nothing was the same anymore. Everything was ripped and reborn. I love her phrasing because it really communicates that kind of emotion. It's a hell of a poem.
Interesting. Yeah, no. So weird. The few times that I've been put under anesthesia, like, I don't really remember how it feels. Because I'm 1 second I'm perfectly conscious, and the next I'm waking up, and there's, like, no sense of lost time, and yet I know I lost time. But when you sleep, at least for me, I'm aware of the fact that time is passing. You know, when I wake up, I have a general idea of how long I was asleep for. The times that I've woken up from anesthesia, there's none of that. It's like I blinked my eyes, and someone's telling me that it's, you know, 14 hours later, and I'm like, really? So,
well, I don't know if she went under because or into a ventilator because of COVID, but either way,
yeah.
When you are about to get into a ventilator, you're not doing well. You're under duress.
No.
Almost panic, you know?
Yeah. No, I was just thinking about it from the context of, like, that complete loss of time. You know, I thought that was a very interesting comparison. An interesting direction of thought. So thank you. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like this, right? I really like listening to all your comments. You talk about the whole losing time. That just reminded me of when years ago I was in a car accident and they gave me morphine for the pain in the emergency room. And at some point I turned to a nurse and said something about how efficient everybody was because I had already only been here there an hour. And they said, no, you've been here 8 hours. But you know, I really like how part of me feels like this is almost as if the weight of everything that has happened in this person's life just crushes them in that one moment. It's almost as if it's a feeling of having a mental breakdown. And I really like, I saw my future fizzle into eternity, my past shattered in bits and pieces. Really, that's very heartbreaking right there. And then a mess of contrary views, a whirlwind thought, true or not, I ride the universe on a wave of mixed up memories, fighting with what I thought was constancy of today. My mind broke open under the weight of all the years. You know, and sometimes you just can't get the facts together. Like, and it's not even that you're lying, but it's that it's hard to explain. Like she says, you described it as a mess of contrary views, a whirlwind of thoughts, and it bombards you. That's what I feel like she's talking about, is how it all just bombards you, it crushes you, and it's a strong emotive right all the way through, and you can feel the emotional pain that this person is, that Allison is going through, or the character that she's writing about is going through. It's just a powerful write and very well done.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed the concept of not being able to basically grab a thought. You know, for me, I guess when I'm going through that, I picture it almost like a room full of papers. You know, and you're just trying to snatch one just to settle on something, and you just can't. I don't know how to describe it. It is a really interesting phenomenon to try to describe when you're having so many thoughts and ideas at the same time that you can't pull them together. So I feel like I know what you and maybe the author here is getting at. So excellent observation. Faziana, did I call on you?
You did, but I definitely have gone through that not being able to grasp a thought thing an awful lot since my brain tumor, and it's such a hard thing to describe, so I respect when people manage to get that out on paper, because that's one of those things I can't seem to grasp a thought about. Can I get Laurent to read Regret is a Cold Companion?
Yes, you can. Let me make sure I was on mute. Refresh. Okay. Regret is a Cold Companion by Écrivain 1. There's a fire banked in the depths of my heart, and glowing embers still bubble and hiss. For years, our lives have been sundered apart in ways that I'd never imagined. Bliss has never crossed my path. I do believe that sometime, down a long, long path, we'll see each other again. When time came to leave, I severed the threads that tied us together, and my regret leaves me dreary and cold. There was never a question I would sever bonds we forged. If possible, though, I'd remold our lives to erase all the troubles and grief, embroider our diverse paths in gold leaf. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. This is just this beautiful imagery. Just even that opening, there's a fire banked in the depths of my heart, and glowing embers still bubble and hiss. And you just picture like those hot red coals, you know, noisily fading and radiating in piles of ash. And it's just a beautiful image. And just like this sense of kind of, it's like it's rough and kind of raw feeling, and yet old, you know, like almost like a wizened yet raw loss, if that makes sense. You know, looking back on a separation, on a loss of relationship that it sounds like was, you know, rather harshly pulled apart. You know, I severed the threads that tied us together, and my regret leaves me dreary and cold. You know, just wishing you had done things differently. And if you could, it's not so much that it sounds like they'd bring the relationship back together or like rekindle the romance in any way. We mold our lives to erase all the troubles and grief, embroider our diverse paths in gold leaf. You know, it sounds more like celebrate the differences, celebrate the divergence, and the different paths that people take instead of, you know, just embittering them. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a beautiful piece. You can feel the regret. And there's also something about this piece that feels very roughly and yet tenderly masculine that I enjoyed. And the imagery in here is just gorgeous. The picturing of the reds and the oranges and the grays and the gold leaf, I just think makes it, at least for me, a visually stunning piece. What did you think, Pam?
I really enjoyed this. It's beautifully written. It has a wonderful rhyme and flow. I like how the poem expresses regret and the imagery of, I severed the threads that tied us together and my regret leaves me dreary and cold. I find it really intriguing and thought-provoking where he says, there was never a question I would sever bonds we forged. And I think because to me, that kind of expresses the whole idea of someone who knows going into a relationship that they're going to mess things up, but they go into it anyways, just kind of hoping against all odds that this time will be different. I think it's an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
I like that interpretation. You know, just the hoping against almost the kind of self-defeatist attitude. I think that's a very interesting perspective. Thanks for that, Pam. And what did you think, Laurent?
Well, there's a very strong sensation of fate in this piece. At no point does it seem like there was ever an intention to maintain the relationship. Mm-hmm. When time came to leave, well, time doesn't come to leave unless it's kind of planned or something happens that's really dire, but I don't get the sense of that. When time came to leave, I severed the threads that tied us together. I mean, he cut them apart. And I, even though he did, you know, the regret expressed is wonderfully related as a sensation leaving me dreary and cold. And when you're dreary and cold, your body, your mind is at a very, very low ebb. But then he reinforces the separation with, there was never a question. I would sever bonds we forged. So apparently it was made fairly clear early on. He wasn't sticking around, and maybe there was early trouble. But, you know, he'd change it all if he could and leave the memory of the two of them, as he says, so brilliantly embroidered in gold leaf. And I too, love the opening lines, the fire that's banked. really well done.
I like what you're touching on there with the concept of fate, you know, the inability to change things, not just because of regret, but because there was never the opportunity to change them to begin with, you know, but almost like the separation and the dissipation of the relationship was just something that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I agree. I do feel like there's a sense of inevitability in here that makes it almost like, it's a beautifully written piece. What are your thoughts of Baziana?
I liked how the different metaphors kind of tied together with, I severed the threads that tied us together, and then later on, the embroidering of the gold leaf, you know, it's all about the threads, and they could either be torn apart or they could be made into something beautiful. And I think that also fits into what Laurent was saying about it being fate, because there's the three, I think they're Nairns, who your fate is that string, and, you know, when they cut it, that's the end. And something about that, what you choose to do with those threads that tie you together is either fate or it influences your fate. I found the whole thread part that went throughout the whole poem really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I do like the tie-in, no pun intended there, of threads, very interesting. I also feel like the use of the gold leaf at the end almost ties the embers back in and the fire from the beginning and gives it a very nice sense of completion. So excellent observation. Gorgeous, right? What do we have up next?
We have one by T. Michelle, if you'll read that for us, Babbler.
This is A Happy Poem by T. Michelle. I'll write me a happy poem, thanking the morning for hovering birds, and words hard to come by for a tiny ant trying to break waves. The oranges fall down in counts and drops on a left-aligned horizon, hissing in my rearview mirror. The back seat is full of people who love getting away, hurrying back into the night with eyes emptied out, scorched by the sun. But I'm still a graveyard girl, a parade of wrangled feasts, meters of damaged skin, like endless stretch of barren lawn. And the past chases down in its aurora sheen, thrown off the earth's flat face. Anywhere is nowhere close. As in lonely rains, hornets lay their honey, everything gray falls into the memory of youth, slowing down as dusk nears. It seems my little happy poem isn't so happy after all. End poem. I really enjoyed this write. I can really kind of relate to this. I struggle quite a bit with writing happy poems, and it's not because I'm never happy. It's just I'm not very good at putting it down on paper. A lot of times when I'm trying to write a poem that sounds upbeat, I feel like it sounds very trite or cliche or cheesy, and I'm just never happy with it. Or I sit down to write the poem, and I'm intending to write something happy, and before I've known it, I've written something quite the opposite. So I find this piece relatable in that sense. It almost feels like a narration of when I sit down and try to write something upbeat. I do like the strange hoverings of darkness, even in the lines here that are supposed to be happy. You know, thanking the morning for hovering birds and words hard to come by for a tiny ant trying to break waves. Even there, just in this first stanza, the thankfulness for these birds, and yet we're still talking about things that are difficult, words that are hard to find, or a struggling ant, you know, which will, you know, I almost picture like this insurmountable burden that they're fighting against. And then again in the next stanza, you know, the oranges fall down. You know, and oranges are such a bright and happy thing typically, and yet we're starting with them falling, you know, in counts and drops on a left aligned horizon, you know, which to me like alludes to writing. You know, but again, the oranges are falling and they're hissing in the rear view, like you're getting further and further away from them. So I found it really interesting that there's like this lingering sense of negativity or difficulty or strife kind of painted in with the happy imagery, you know, backseat full of people who love getting away, hurrying back into the night with eyes emptied out, scorched by the sun, you know, burnt sockets, you know, there's something kind of intrinsically negative hidden in there. So I really enjoyed this piece. I found it very relatable. It almost in some ways felt like masking, you know, like trying to be happy despite a lack of happiness, you know, fighting to find those bright moments, but not being able to untinge them with the current state of mind. So I really liked this piece and I found it very relatable. What did you think, Susiana?
I loved the stanza, but I'm still a graveyard girl, a parade of wrangled feasts, meters of damaged skin, like endless stretch of barren lawn. It's like, even if you dress yourself up as happy, you know, you can wear bright colors and makeup and like try to make yourself like the cheery person, you underneath still feel like that graveyard girl. And just the way that it's described in that stanza really struck me. The part you pointed out with the eyes emptied out also really hit me. That's a powerful line right there. I found it interesting that it was hornets lay their honey, because hornets don't have honey as far as I know. It's the bees that do. And hornets are kind of like the asshole bug that appears like a bee and then actually just is not helpful and just attacks you, whereas bees are quite good. So that a hornet lays the honey and everything gray falls into the memory of youth, I think that's a deliberate choice. Of like saying like it may seem like it's a harmless bee who's creating something good, but actually it's a hornet. I don't know. I feel like that's a purposeful choice, and I don't fully understand why she made it, but I like it. this has so much depth and interesting aspects to it. I feel like I'd love to talk to her about it.
Yeah, great observation. I guess for me, I guess my take on that line with the hornets lay their honey, it kind of goes back to the idea of faking it. You know, there is no honey. Hornets don't have honey. So, you know, even to pretend or insinuate that there is anything sweet about hornet is just kind of false. I guess that's how I interpret it. You're pretending. There's good things in the bad when really you're focusing on the bad and just pretending that there's good. Or at least that's how it feels in a moment. That was just my interpretation. what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I think this, well, first of all, just amazing imagery and metaphors. I was also drawn to the line about I'm still a garbage girl. No, and as was mentioned, the whole idea that no matter how many bright colors you dress up in, you know, it's all about how you feel on the inside. And, you know, I thought that was a really good point you brought up about, about the hornets lay their honey, everything gray falls. I really feel like, you know, as was mentioned, it has to do with, you know, false honey being offered up, like false compliments. You know, people who say nice things or do nice things simply for the intention of what they want in return. this is such a powerful rite with a strong sense of loneliness and a struggle to love and accept oneself. And I think every one of us can relate to that first line of trying to write a poem that, you know, we set our minds on what kind of poem we're going to write, and the poem says, no, that's not what I'm going to be. So excellent write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. I love it. I think even the title kind of echoes that sentiment, you know, a happy poem. But that's only a very surface thing about it. So, great observations. What did you think, Laurent?
Well, Team Michelle is a reader, that's for sure. She references, I always thought it was a guy. Sorry if I made that mistake. I'll try not to do that again. She references Bradbury and some lines from Dandelion Wine.
Mm-hmm.
About some people turning sad when they're young without, you know, any special reason. They almost seem to be born that way. And I've read a lot of Bradbury in my time, and there are lines in here that could have come from Bradbury. Michelle writes beautifully in a style I'm really appreciative of. I agree with Ephesiana on the Graveyard Girl stanza, which is really magnificent. I love the lines, and the past chases down in its aurora sheen, thrown off the earth's flat face. Anywhere is nowhere close. That's just, really, it brings a smile to my face when I read that. And hornets don't lay honey, that's right, because they all die at the end of every season. Only the queen survives. Poor hornets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also really like that stanza, you know, the past chases down in its aurora sheen. Just the concept of, you know, the brightness just being nowhere to be found, basically, bouncing off what should be like a round and quote-unquote kind of happy shape, at least that's my interpretation, versus, you know, something flattened and two-dimensional. I think there's some real parallels to, like, an emotional state there that I think are well articulated. So excellent observations. What's our next piece?
We have one by Damn It Dave. Pam, could you read that one?
Oh, absolutely. Let me just go ahead and get back to Late Night Poet and refresh. There we go. And this is Anxiety Blues by Damn It Dave, and it goes like this. Anxiety has woken me again to tell me not a thing will be all right. It sings a song of heartache, woe, and pain, and keeps up and crying half the night. I'm shaking like a leaf in winter wind. My heart is pounding bass in stereo. I don't know if I'll break or merely bend. With every breath, I feel the tension grow. My doctor gave me drugs to ease the stress, but I believe in all likelihood that they are aggravating all this mess. I don't think they are working as they should. Now, if it gets too bad, I'll take some pills to let them sleep away the angst and dread. I know they're not a cure for all my ills, but they can quell the pounding in my head. Some days my sanity rips at the seams. The anxiousness I feel runs much too deep. So I escape inside the world of dreams. The only peace I find is in my sleep. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I really enjoyed this piece. There's something about this kind of childlike rhyme scheme that it is almost like humor at a rather serious theme. It gives it almost like this lilting storybook feel when the topic, you know, is rather bleak and it's, you know, struggling with anxiety, not being able to sleep, not being able to unwind, and, you know, taking this medication that you're not sure whether or not you should be taking, and you know, even the anxiety of that, like, do I take it, do I not take it, is it making me better, is it making me worse, you know, is really relatable. You know, I get quite a bit of anxiety just myself, just sitting around and feeling dread. You know, I woke up just the other day with this, like, crazy sense of dread, like, first thing in the morning, like, it, oh, today is just going to be, like, a horrible day, like, something really bad is going to happen today. And, you know, it's nonsensical, like, there's no reason to believe that, but, you know, just waking up with that pit in my stomach, you know, it can be such a difficult thing to deal with. So I really relate to this, and just the concept of sleeping, you know, just to sleep it away, you know. It's so complex, you know, to struggle with the weird mix of feelings, because it's like, at least for me, like, I want to sleep it away. You know, the sleep is a nice reprieve from having to feel all of the things that I'm feeling. And yet, then when I wake up, there's this weird sense of guilt from sleeping too much that then compounds into more dread. It's just, you know, a wonderful cocktail of feelings. So I really enjoyed this. I found it very relatable. I found it to be a good description of what it's like to kind of deal with anxiety. I particularly liked the stanza that focused on the medication of it, and just the way that the rhyme scheme kind of lends it humor. My doctor gave me drugs to ease the stress, but I believe in all likelihood they are aggravating all this mess. I don't think they are working as they should. I don't know. I found it humorous and serious at the same time, with a very on point topic. So I liked this piece. Laurent, what did you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed the poem. Damn it, Dave has been through so many incarnations in the last 4 years, I can't remember under which name I first read his work. But his work is easily identifiable because he rhymes naturally, he rhymes well, he rhymes seamlessly. I think I could pick his work out almost anywhere. And it is a simple rhyme. But it fits. I think it fits the concept because it does relieve the tension that could otherwise build up. He always interjects, always. He almost always, I think, interjects a little bit of humor to leaven the angst and the dread. And, you know, when you wake up in the morning, as you were telling that fascinating little story at the beginning, and you feel that sense of dread, you know, sometimes we process things in a state of unconsciousness that we might better pay attention to. So good luck with that.
Yeah, well, it hasn't been a great week. So. Maybe my subconscious knew something. It was like, hey, the FDA is on its way. But yeah. I appreciate humor as a tool to deal with serious topics. You know, just I think it's a useful coping mechanism, personally. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I enjoy Damn It Dave's poetry. It always has great rhyme and flow. And I have to agree with you. It is nice when people use, like, a slight bit of humor for a lighter touch to deal with serious issues. And, you know, like, I realize this is... It's titled Anxiety Blues, and it opens up with the anxiety and the waking of you up and, you know, racing through your head. But I think also when it goes near the end, when it talks about trying, escaping and finding peace only in the world of dreams, I feel like there's a kind of an idea of depression there too, because oftentimes they go hand in hand. And I like that he put in the two stanzas about medication. I felt that, you know, when you talk about an issue like this, it's important, you know, to, you know, let people know that there are choices out there and you have to do what works best for you. You know, for some people, you know, medication, you know, doesn't work. And for many, you know, myself included, you know, medication is what helps just, you know, keep you together. And it's important to know when it's time to make a choice. I think it's an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Yeah, I like the points that you made about the medication. You know, it's not all of it's for everybody, but there are definitely people who it benefits immensely. You know, I struggle with medication myself, just because I tend to dissociate a bit on medication, and it makes me give me a rather flat affectation. Like, I don't experience the spectrum of emotions like I do normally when I'm consistently on medication, and that gets difficult for me because while I don't particularly love my lows, it's really hard to face the idea that I'm not going to experience my highs, because like my manic phases can just be so wonderful. Like, I can learn so much and do so much and get so much done and be so immensely happy for a period of time. And it's hard to sacrifice that sometimes. So I understand like the battle with taking medication. And it's so different for everybody. But definitely, you know, there are people out there who are on it, and they should be on it. And it benefits them just in fantastic ways. I mean, myself included, like I do take medication, but I understand and relate to the struggle of this piece there. So I thought that was a great observation. Ephesiana, what did you think?
I liked the second stanza. My heart is pounding bass in stereo. I relate to that, although usually I don't feel it so much in my chest as my head. I can, when I'm feeling anxious, I can hear my heartbeat so much. It reminds me of like in a video game when you, if you ever, I'm a gamer, so I just relate everything to games. But if you're wounded in a game and you're in like the fight for your life mode, it has like your vision goes blurry and it has the like pounding heart noise. That's what it's like to have an anxiety attack for me. So I like that he pointed out that physical reaction to it. And I don't know if I'll break or merely bend with every breath I feel the tension grow. I can definitely, I can feel that. And I like the way that it's described. The escaping to dreams, I think Pam made a good point of that can be depression as well. Often depression is where you want to slip into the dreams to escape it. Anxiety usually makes it so I can't sleep, whereas depression is the opposite. All I can do is sleep. Someone once said, anxiety is caring too much about everything, and depression is not caring about anything anymore. And if you have both, then it's just hell. And yes, and I feel like Damn It Dave gets that hell of being in between where you care about all of the things, but you can't care enough to do anything about them, so you just lay there and worry about all the things. Yes, I feel you there, Damn It Dave.
Such a wonderful place.
Right? Isn't that the place everyone wants to be? Let's trade lives. Okay.
Red.
Yes. Yes. Oh no, there's one more. I was skipping ahead to the next contest, but I just realized that there was one that you posted after that wasn't in the same section. Here we go. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud. Here we go. Let's do this one, and we'll go back to Neutron in a second. Okay, so I'm going to read one by N.P. Schneider. Happy existence. Existence is brutal. Consume the fellow man. Melted chrysalis, flesh in glass. Mirrors and shadows on a cave wall. Bronze shackles in a dark cave. with a distant flame, prisoners and shadows of the above, shades of faith and marionette God. I crack my neck and wish on the bones, twisting the vertebrae, turning into a numb vegetable. Atrophy is a slow poison when trapped, sat behind steel bars. Eventually, inmates forget why they were locked up and how the seasons change. There isn't even the sound of rain. Apples are the only meal, and a fruit clock. Brown cores rot, white fuzz, blackhead larvae, and grandfather moths flutter in time. The moths, who are prisoners too, they are born in the cave, grow up from worms, wear their wings in solid rock, force themselves to mate, and die without ever tasting the sun. Die without tasting more than apples on their tongues. It's different for us. We saw the sun before night and smelled tired tree bark. I remember a quietly burning sun with a red touch of flames on my skin back in a garden home. A garden home surrounded by wildflowers, ruby petal poppy, lavender like purple bells, the kind of yarrow in bouquet and towering sunflowers. One young summer, a dying oak tree was infested with burrowing worms, termites, and beetles. Bugs feasted on the tree until it was spongy black. Old wood didn't fatten them. Flowers were left as stems, bitten and cut by pincers. The colorful crimson, purple, china white, and gold wilted in exposed dirt. Forget the flowers. Graves in winter's frost, frozen ground, and snow. Until next spring, we sowed our own silt seeds in mud. After the liquid dew, bees and hummingbirds visited. They waved hello to the nectar plants. Even the sunflowers sprouted back, but the poppy remembered and would not grow. Weeping was heard from branches and stems when leaves were skag in the wind. The meadow lost a loved hue, but our garden wouldn't be forgotten. End poem.
Great read, Faziana. This piece is really interesting and complex, and there's so many different ways that I can take it, you know. But what really gets me is just the concept of being paralyzed, you know, being broken. I crack my neck and wish on the bones, twisting the vertebra, turning into a numb vegetable, you know, to just kind of break yourself and be rendered motionless, you know, whether figuratively or literally is really interesting. And then to just rot there. You know, to just rot and just let things eat away. And then we're taken into, like, this story about these larvae that are in apples, you know, the only meal and a fruit clock, you know, to monitor time by decay, you know, to state of decay, to tell you how much time has passed. It's such a stark and interesting concept. And then to empathize or envision these moths whose entire life cycles happen in a prison, you know, in a dark cave where they grow up and they only eat apples and they only mate with each other and they, you know, like it's such a limited existence and yet they're not even really aware of it. You feel the pain of it because you have experienced otherwise, you know, and then to kind of end in like this really interesting requiem, you know, like looking back at, you know, earlier times and earlier experiences and the way things happened. And to just, I don't know, there's almost like this feeling of emptiness about it. And especially tied up with that, that last couplet, you know, that meadow lost a loved hue, but our garden wouldn't be forgotten. You know, you can't go back there. You can't redo it. You can't change what happened. And you can still see like the brightness and the color of it. And yet it's tinged, by the current experience, whether that's like bitterness or regret or longing. I feel like this wonderfully leaves quite a bit of emotionality up to the reader, and yet I feel like it plucks at them so nicely, just about loss and coping and grief and, addiction and being wounded. I just really enjoyed this. I just feel like it's very versatile, and it takes you through such a series of images that write this really interesting narrative about just kind of deteriorating as a person. So I loved this piece. I thought it was really gorgeous, really stunning imagery in here. What did you think, Laurent?
Let me get off mute. even though this is beautifully written in many places, it really is a very sad poem. You did a brilliant analysis was just done on this piece. I almost hesitate to go beyond. I like the stanza, especially the moths who are prisoners too. They are born in the cave, grow up from worms, wear their wings in solid rock, force themselves to mate and die without ever tasting the sun. And if we want to take that as a metaphor, there are many, many people who don't leave their little caves and don't taste the sun. And if they have wings, it's as if they were in solid rock, because they never open. They never fly. To me, that's a word of caution. Take a bite of life when you can, because one day you may not be able to, not with a corona around. Great piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that concept of, enjoying what you have, even if those things were in the past, because, other people or other things never got to experience them at all. It's such a dark and almost negative way to look at a positive thing. I think it's beautifully crafted. What did you think of Faziana?
I love both of your comments. Like Babbler, you got into so much of it. It's wonderful, wonderful comments. And Laurent, I completely agree with you about that part with the moth who's never seen the sun. I thought that was really powerful. And some people have never gotten to experience any good times. So to go out and see what you can and get the sunlight that you can and appreciate that you ever had some sunlight, it is a strong message. It's definitely a dark and sad piece that's beautifully expressed. At the beginning, I was thinking that the mirrors and shadows on the cave wall were Plato, and then I was excited to see in the AN that it is related to Plato. It's been ages since I've read Plato, but I do remember there was the thing about the cave, and I thought that was a really nice reference to start with in this poem. And all of the bug imagery and how they ate away at the flowers and the tree and all of the life felt like some really nice metaphors. I mean, it gives me the creepy crawlies because I'm really not a bug person, but I think that's what makes it work so nicely is to imagine that the swarm of insects who kind of eat away at the beauty of things. I thought this was very nicely done.
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed the theme of the insects throughout. I think it was really well done. I mean, even from the beginning, the melted chrysalis flesh in glass, as a tool of transformation, throughout, a lot of people think, oh, turning into a butterfly, but you have captured moths and insects that are eating away at trees, and even like uses like decay as a measurement of time. I think it's a nice interweaving through here. It's nicely thematic. I think it's a beautiful addition to this piece. Excellent, right? So I think that's the last one for my contest. So I think where are we off to now?
So my other contest is Grieve Pieces of Yourself, and it was about any kind of grief that is not necessarily related to death. So I had a little infographic thing that I found that says grief isn't just for death. It's also for friendships that have ended, losing your community, missing the certainty you once had, questioning your judgment, releasing who you once were, feeling lost and unanchored, and losing traditions that you loved. And then there's a quote from Owaki Emezi that says, his grief was chasing him from room to room, begging him to spend some time alone with it. So that was the prompt. And our first entry for that is by Neutron Bomb. And Laurent, would you like to read that for us?
Certainly. Back there. All right. This is called Blistered Heart. The silence splinters like wood hissing and spitting in a fire drum. Your voice replaced by my sobbing soliloquies. My chest burns from the coals and embers that dissolve within. Third degree burns, blister and serum fills the cavity between my lungs. There is no preparing for open heart surgery. Surgeons brutally cracking my rib and sternum. Take my rib, atom, and call it your own. Veins stripped of the color cerulean blue. Blood runs clear and my lips are pasty from a tourniquet affixed to my neck. I am hemorrhaging salt and my cheeks are bloated like a decaying carcass with lips pursed and trembling without the wonderment of a newborn. You shone bright like the evening star, but like a gas lantern, you're extinguished by exposure to gale-force winds. I should have shielded your eternal flame from the apothecary's preferring. Wow, I'm sorry. I should have shielded your eternal flame from the apothecary's proffering poisons. End poem.
Lovely read, Laurent.
Lovely recovery, baby, but a lousy read.
Yeah, you know, one line, but you fixed it. Well, I was referring more to tonality and the pace at which you read. And I felt was well done. I feel like, you know, this piece is a pretty heavy piece. I love all of the dark imagery in it because it really highlights that the weightiness of grief, like when you're really in that trench, when you're really like in that pit of it, when the emotional processing, in my opinion, is like at its deepest, I think is well communicated here. And just this almost physical response to loss, my chest burns from the coals and embers that dissolve within. Third degree burns, blister, and serum fills the cavity between my lungs. And the idea that the place where your heart is, the place where your feeling is, your emotions, has been seared to the point where it's just a liquid serum-filled blister. You know, the pain of that and the visual of that, I just think is so well done and tied here with the color. You know, you can just kind of envision it. And then there is no preparing for open heart surgery. Surgeons brutally cracking my ribs and sternum. Take my rib, Adam, and call it your own. You know, just picture like just the cracking open of a sternum, just, you know, this sudden heart, you know, invasive procedure, like And again, the pain associated with that, you know, and there's no preparing for open heart surgery. No, you know, not typically, you know, a lot of it is the emergency stuff, you know. But even if you are prepared for open heart surgery, I don't think many, you know, you're really prepared for the pain of it. So I just, the idea of just suddenly having your chest torn apart, I think is beautifully emoted here. And then, you know, the blood running clear and just lips being pasty from a tourniquet affixed to the neck, you know, just this pressure of loss, like this strangulation, caused by grief. Again, just very heavy, and brutal, emoting of grief here that I think is just really well done. And I just love the blunt and dark language that Neutron wields so effortlessly. It appears, you know, just this really delving into it and not shying away from leaning into the ugly as a way to express the difficult. I just think is excellent. And just that these last two lines, you know, I should have shielded your eternal flame from the apothecary's proffering poison. You know, like this feeling like you should have done something, you know, and I think it highlights just kind of that stage of grief where you're just, you feel like, oh, if only I had done X or if only I had done Y. And of course, you know, almost certainly not at fault here and nothing you really could have done and not even necessarily anything you should have done, but just this rationalization of all the different possibilities that could have been. And I feel like that's really the meat that's at the heart of grief is the loss of all the could have beens, the would-bes, all of the possibilities are snuffed out, and that's really kind of what loss is. So I think this is beautifully written, and it's heart-wrenching, and it's ugly in the best kind of way. So I think this is an excellent piece from Neutron. What did you think of Hasiana?
I loved it. I think heart-wrenching is a good way to put it. And she does use this medical kind of imagery to really bring to life the emotional damage of having that broken heart kind of metaphorical sense of the heart surgery. The physical feeling that you get from grief too, because while it works nicely as a metaphor, it also, like, when you are devastated, you physically feel it. I am hemorrhaging salt, because it just shows, like, the amount of tears that are coming out if you are hemorrhaging salt. And without the wonderment of a newborn, you know, not crying like a baby, crying like it's the end of the world, it's different. I thought that was really a beautiful poem, even though it has such, you know, the grittiness to it, like the blisters and all of that. It's gross, but in a really interesting and well-done way. I think Sobbing Soliloquies should be the title of a book of poetry. Personally, Neutron, if you're listening, I think that needs to be the title of one of your books. Sobbing Soliloquies. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, that is a clever phrase. It works well. Yeah, no, I agree. I just love the brutality of language. Yeah, it is like almost medical. And that line about, you know, without the wonderment of a baby, I just picture, you know, like the adult ugly sob, you know. There's nothing cute about it. It's, you know, it's just that gut wrench. So, great observations. What did you think, Laurent?
Well, Neutron writes with great power, and I love how each stanza holds one very vivid image from the silence sounding like wood hissing and spitting, or the chest burning from the coals and embers with the serum filling the cavity between the lungs, the open heart surgery, the stripped veins, hemorrhaging salt, a lot of things you've already mentioned, and then bringing it all right back to the lost love You shone bright like the evening star, like a gas lantern. You were extinguished by exposure to gale force winds, and those gale force winds, one assumes, are drugs from the last two lines. I should have shielded your eternal flame from the apothecaries preferring poisons. I'm wondering whether there wasn't some kind of an overdose in there somewhere. So it's very strong. It's very powerful. Certainly communicates the title very, very well. A Blistered Heart. Congratulations, Newchon.
Yeah, I agree. I do think it, you know, kind of hints at addiction and overdose. There, I think there's a nod to that. It's just a very powerful piece. So, wonderful bit of writing. What's up next, Ephesiana?
Next, we have one by Poetic Picasso, also known as Frank. And we have an audio for that.
In the gyroscopic whirlpool of a covert force of nature, a presence of the powerful locomotion in the uniformity of the vaporized moisture of waterlogged tears appears, saving me from the depth of a drowning quicksand. I see inside a cerulean eyes a bright radiation, like the sparkling orbs of stars beyond the satellites, hidden in constellations of hieroglyphics of mystery, the echoes of sonic waves broadcast in cryptic codes. Those magnetized eyes draw me closer to a center of gravity, and I float into deep space, into the intersection of time, hanging on to the swinging chandelier of hope and rebirth, lost in the shape of origami art and aesthetic colors. The intense reverberation of the music of xylophones awakens the jukeboxes of the eons of the universe. In the crescent moon turns to a shade of acrylic as I see a necklace of stars before the sink darkness. When I stare more into her eyes, I can see clearly beyond the yoke of the alabaster layer of deception, the dangerous dagger of a bitter regret injected into the thick filaments of silk tapestries of labyrinths. I can see all of these things through a small keyhole into the eyes without a face. Oh, I can see all of these things through the small keyhole into the eyes without a face. In the poem.
Well, wonderful theatrical read from Poetic Picasso. And what an intriguing write. It's just so interesting, the following of just this wonderment of looking into these eyes. You know, I see inside her cerulean eyes the bright radiation, like the sparkling orbs of stars beyond the satellites, hidden in constellations of hieroglyphics of mystery, the echoes of sonic waves broadcast in cryptic notes. It just sounds like, you know, trying to decode all of the mysteries of the universe in someone's gaze, and just that
that mesmerization, just that almost loss of self in the gaze of someone, and just kind of letting yourself go to that. You know, those magnetized eyes draw me closer to a center of gravity, and just, you know, allowing loss in the existence of someone else. I find it very fascinating. And then the second to last stanza, you know, kind of gets it at a bit of a darker piece. You know, when I stare more into her eyes, I can see clearly beyond the yoke of their alabaster layer of deception, the dangerous dagger of her bitter regret injected into the thick filaments of silk tapestries of labyrinths. It's like losing yourself in someone else to discover that it was like a trap, you know, almost like a spider web or a ruse, you know, to lay yourself bare and then feel the sting of, you know, in this case, the dangerous dagger, you know, to feel like the bitterness of being used or caught up in something. So I found this really fascinating. And I feel like the beautiful description of language and just the way things are described just leads the reader to almost be mesmerized along with the narrator, you know, to just envision all of these beautiful things for there to be that twist at the end, you know, almost like a knife in the back. I think it's a wonderful narrative and an interesting setup. So I loved this write. I thought it was very well done. What did you think, Faziana?
I like all of your comments, and yeah, you can really tell that Frank is a voice actor because his sound clouds are always amazing. I really liked the dark part, especially that second last stanza that you were talking about, where beyond the yoke of the deception, the dangerous dagger of her bitter regret injected into the thick filaments of silk tapestries of labyrinths. I love that part. It's like, you know, he sees all of the beauty in the beginning and the possibilities, and she's like opening up worlds for him just looking into her eyes. But then he sees that beyond that, there is that loss and regret and bitterness. And, you know, she's not this perfectly happy, ideal creature. She has a darkness in her too. And seeing all of that by looking into someone's eyes, it's a fantastic poem and really explores being able to recognize things within someone when you truly pay attention.
Yeah, I found it interesting too, you know, discerning whether or not it's detecting the deception before or, you know, in the midst, you know, like how much of it is a narrative in the narrator's mind and how much of it is, you know, occurring. And I found it very interesting because there's different ways to look at this piece. What did you think, Laurent?
He actually had to go. It's
okay.
Just
you and me now. Yeah. No, I found this piece very beautiful and very interesting and intriguing. It almost felt like, and my mind goes blank, like an old school horror, you know, in a way, just kind of the suspensefulness of it and the twist. So
yeah,
wonderful.
And Frank has written a few like that, so that's right up his alley. I think you're probably onto something there.
Yeah, I can't think of the author that I want to think of. Just, you know, words I can't find at the moment. It's floating in there, one of those pieces of paper I can't grab. yeah.
Uh-huh. That's okay.
Enjoy it.
We have an audio for this next one by Cal, so I'm going to play that one.
Alrighty.
Spontaneous synopsis, saw delicate words upon cracked end keyboards, warm hands naped inner thighs of yesterday. Sadness haunts as visions ponder moments left as swinging rusted dovetail hinges in sea salted winds of opportunity. A flatline pulse dies, voids languid, revealing truth as time is digested, thrown into liquid moons. Mojo rising resurrection, grieving to forgive, fighting to forget, eternal union, finding a nest, dividing day and night, sleeping on soundless shores, finding footprints, dissolving tides, roots, water, tree. Remembering every dripping word that was said. On the other side of night, we chase dreams, twining billowing smoke above whimsical streams, releasing wild galloping horses into open fields. And as the story just begun, we ended us. The oceans would appear calm, injured wings up to lovers' palms.
Wow. Beautiful guitar music. Wonderful presentation for this piece. I found it very interesting. I'm also very intrigued by this photo, which is associated with it, that is like a pile of vegetables. Like, there's a lot of different vegetables in this pile, and I'm just very fascinated on the tie-in. I'm just looking at it going, but anyway, I really found this piece interesting. You know, just it feels almost like an exploration of thoughts, as like a reminiscence of, you know, something that really – a relationship or something that didn't work out, you know, spontaneous synapses drawing delicate words upon crackling keyboards, warm hands, nape inner thighs of yesterday, you know, just like this intimacy that is kind of bringing out this inspiration in the moment, you know, this recollection on intimate moments. And then the next stanza, you know, sadness haunts his vision, ponder moments left as swinging rusted dovetail hinges and sea-salted winds of opportunity. You know, just that things didn't work out, that sea-salted winds of opportunity, you know, the tears shed for things that didn't happen, that didn't come to be. Again, that just sense of loss. A flatline pulse dies, voids languid, revealing truth. This time is digested. You know, just the emptiness feeling that comes after kind of processing grief. You know, I feel like it's almost like a walkthrough exploration of processing a loss, you know, which I found very fascinating. And then at the end there, as the story just begun, we ended us. The oceans would appear calm, injured wings up to lover's palm. You know, just a relationship ended too soon. You know, as the relationship developed and as this intimacy became realized and became a thing and was wild and free, like wild galloping horses, you know, it was just kind of cut short. And, you know, everything kind of appears calm and everything appears okay, but there are, you know, wounds for sure beneath the surface. So I found it very interesting and an interesting read through of imagery, you know, so many different kind of disparate moments that get tied together in a storyline. Also found the presentation very interesting, the ceasing of the guitar, you know, kind of correlating with the abrupt end of a relationship. My thought was a wonderful presentation choice. So I enjoyed this piece very much, and I enjoyed kind of looking at each tidbit of visual and then kind of seeing how it ties into the narrative. It's a wonderful piece. What did you think, Faziana?
I liked it. I like what you said about how the guitar stopping suddenly worked well with it. And I didn't even think about that, but now that you say that, it absolutely. I had little bits that I liked in every stanza, it seems. It's hard to pick one. I liked the inner thighs of yesterday. That's something that shows, like, the intimacy that is lost. I really liked that phrase. I liked that the winds of opportunity flatlined. That's a strong way to jump from that one stanza of, like, you know, the wings is going up and then it flatlines. It goes into the darker side of things. Grieving to forgive and fighting to forget, because forgive and forget are quite different, even though they're often together. I really liked the distinction right there. And the end, as a story just begun, we ended us, and grieving that it was just starting and it was lost. I am also curious about the vegetables. I know that he posts vegetables a lot in one of the groups we're in together, and I don't know if they're his garden or it is an interesting choice for this poem. I'm going to have to ask him about it.
Yeah. I mean, quite the cornucopia there. I mean, we've got zucchini and potatoes and a yellow squash and some nice looking green beans and several different varieties of lettuce. It's quite the cornucopia of vegetables there. But I enjoyed the piece. It was very emotional, and such an interesting tie-in. And there's a lot of pieces here that look like bits of lyrics from, like, some classic songs like Mojo Rising and Dividing Day and Night, and just nods to lyrics, I believe, kind of peppered throughout, which makes an interesting tie-in as well.
It does.
So we have 4 minutes left. Did you want to try to squeeze in another one, or...?
Yeah, there's one really brief one, and I know Rosie is listening, and I want to make sure to squeeze hers in, so I'm going to jump in that. Do You by Rosie. I see many heartless people in my life. Silently, they want to stab me with a knife. If I only knew before, and only if I could, I didn't want to be in this crazy hood. Nobody asked me, do I want to live? To you guys, I have nothing to give anymore. Simple.
Great read. Interesting piece. You know, it starts with do you, which of course prompts, you know, me as a reader to be like, do I what? and it's the idea of encountering so many people who don't care about you, you know, silently want to stab you with a knife, which, you know, I hear so much. People would be like, you know, oh, I would blah, 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 you know, oh, I hate that person. And it's so interesting because, like, I've literally never felt that way in my life, but I hear it all the time. I also hear, like, the weird marring of the difference between revenge and justice. You know, they're not the same thing. What is just is not always what makes you feel good on a revenge perspective. And then if I only knew before, and if I only could, I don't want to be in this crazy hood. You know, whether this is a young person and they're born into this neighborhood that they don't want to be in, which I can strongly relate to as someone who grew up in a really crappy trailer park. Or, you know, you just move somewhere new and you find that you just really don't fit in. And sometimes those decisions last longer than you intended them to. And then the last stanza is really kind of the heart-wrenching one. You know, nobody asked me, do I want to live? To you guys, I have nothing to give anymore. You know, just living in this terrible place around so many heartless and cruel people and, you know, not feeling cared about and not feeling like you have anything to offer, which is kind of heart-wrenching, you know. People always have something to offer. And I feel like so many heartless comments are made that aren't really grounded in the way that people actually feel. You know, having been a teenage girl and going to a small school, I can't tell you how many conversations I overheard of young girls being extremely catty and saying horrible things about and to people. But the emotions aren't there to match it. You know, it's just this weird exploration of drama. So while I don't know how factual this story is or if it's a narrative or, you know, that kind of thing, when I encounter this kind of stuff, it's always just, you know, don't screw other people. Like, just ignore them as best you can. And just remember that, like, what you can say behind a screen or in your group of friends when you're feeling empowered is not necessarily how people actually feel about things, you know. Not too many people would be like, oh, you want to kill me? Okay, then kill me. Or are going to actually do it. Because the actual feelings aren't behind these words. Anyway, that's just what makes me think of. It just brings me right back to horrible middle school drama. So, did you want to say anything, Ephesiana?
Just briefly, because we're out of time. But even though we're not on live, I think it does record a little bit longer. I think that the end is really what strikes me as the grieving part for her, where they think that she has nothing to give anymore, and grieving, feeling useful, grieving that sense of that you have something to give, that people believe in you, grieving that feeling of belonging is something that makes this work in the piece. And yeah, you're right about how it's like in middle school and high school. It's quite unfortunate. So we're out of time. If anyone didn't get their poem read, it will be next week. We definitely have everything we need for next week. We were double prepared this week, so it's good. And thank you, Babbler, for your inspiring contest.
Yeah, and thank you, too, for kind of helping things along. And I know I was a little slow on the reaction speed, so I appreciate the support.
That's okay. Hey, I hope you feel better soon.
Oh, me too. And please.